Hello, everyone. I'm Dylan Carrillo, and welcome to Archive Session 1, Part 2. In this segment, we're going to hear from two individuals who approach the Mesilla files from very different perspectives. First, we'll hear from Theodore Ray Mercer, or TRM, who will describe how he first became involved with the Mesilla files more than 60 years ago. His personal journey and decades of collecting stories, documents, and observations have helped preserve much of what we now know about this remarkable archive. Following TRM, investigative journalist TJ Clayton will take a different approach. Rather than focusing on the stories, TJ will examine the evidence itself, what documents exist, what can be verified, and how the TRC Research Center evaluates the information we receive. Together, these two reports provide both the personal history and the investigative foundation behind the Mesilla files. So let's begin. TRM, the archive is yours.
People often ask me how I became involved in what we now call the Mesilla files. The truth is, I never intended to. I wasn't looking for mysteries. I wasn't hunting for ghosts or legends. I certainly wasn't trying to solve some century-old puzzle. I was simply living my life. Back in the 1960s, after graduating from New Mexico State University, I went to work for a company that bought and sold land, surveyed property, and worked on pipeline projects throughout southern New Mexico, Arizona, and northern Mexico. That job put me in the desert almost every day. If you've spent much time in the desert, you know it's a remarkable place. Most people see empty land. I saw history, old wagon roads, abandoned homesteads, mining camps, forgotten cemeteries. You begin to realize that thousands of people lived, worked, struggled, and disappeared in places most folks drive right past without ever noticing. But my first real encounter with what became the Mesilla files didn't happen out in the desert. It happened in a bar. Now, before you think every story begins in a bar, well, around Mesilla, quite a few of them do. There was an old place where ranchers, farmers, deputies, surveyors, professors, and just about everyone else eventually wandered in after work. The conversations were usually about weather, cattle, politics, or football. But every now and then, someone would tell a story that made the whole room quiet. One evening, I heard a man mention the name Captain Voss. I'd never heard the name before. Someone else laughed and said, "Don't start that again." Another fellow leaned over and quietly said, "He's real." Nobody argued after that. The subject simply changed. I couldn't stop thinking about it. Who was Captain Voss? Why did some people seem uncomfortable even mentioning his name? Over the next several years, I heard that name again. And again, always from different people. None of them seemed connected. Yet the stories had strange similarities. There was always a desert. There was usually an old map, sometimes symbols, sometimes a strange traveler, and almost always, Captain Voss. At first, I assumed these were just colorful local legends. Every town has them. But then something happened that changed the way I looked at all of it. An elderly gentleman handed me a worn notebook and said, "You seem like someone who won't throw this away." That notebook contained handwritten observations about strange events near Mesilla, dating back decades. There were sketches, maps, names, and dates. Most of it made very little sense. But it was real. Someone had taken the time to record these things. That notebook became the first piece of what would eventually become my collection. From that day forward, I started paying attention. Whenever I heard an unusual story, I wrote it down. If someone offered me an old photograph, I kept it. If a family was cleaning out an attic and found a box of papers, I'd ask if I could look through them. Little by little, the collection grew. Not because I believed every story. Far from it. In fact, I was skeptical of most of them. But I also understood something important. If no one preserved these records, we'd never have the chance to determine which stories contained truth and which belonged only to legend. So I became a collector. Not of answers, but of questions. Looking back now, more than 60 years later, I still don't have all the answers. I still don't know who Captain Voss really was. I still don't know why certain symbols appear in the desert. And I certainly don't know whether some of these stories describe forgotten history, elaborate folklore, or something we've yet to understand. But I do know this. The people who shared these stories with me believed they had seen something unusual. They weren't trying to become famous. Most never expected anyone else to hear their stories. They simply wanted someone to remember. That's why I'm here. That's why I turned my collection over to the TRC Research Center. Because mysteries have a way of disappearing if no one bothers to preserve them. Maybe together, we'll finally discover which pieces fit, and which mysteries still refuse to be solved. I'm Theodore Ray Mercer, and that's how my investigation began.
Whenever I begin investigating a story, I always start with the same question. What evidence actually exists? Not what people believe? Not what they've heard? Not what someone told them happened? Evidence. If we're going to spend time investigating the Mesilla files, we owe it to ourselves and to everyone watching to separate documented evidence from rumor, speculation, and legend. That doesn't mean the legends aren't important. In fact, many investigations begin with stories. But stories alone don't prove anything. So what do we actually have? Quite a bit, as it turns out. The archive contains hundreds of documents gathered over more than a century. Some are handwritten journals. Others are letters exchanged between people living in and around Mesilla. There are newspaper clippings, personal notebooks, maps, photographs, audio recordings, sketches, and witness statements. Some documents are signed. Many are anonymous. A few have no obvious origin at all. One of the first things I look for is whether a document can be independently verified. Can we identify who wrote it? Can we determine when it was written? Does it describe events that can be confirmed through other records? Sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes it isn't. That doesn't automatically make a document false. It simply means we have to be careful about the conclusions we draw. Another important source of information comes from eyewitness accounts. Over the years, ranchers, law enforcement officers, surveyors, hikers, and longtime residents have reported unusual experiences in the desert. Some describe strange lights. Others describe unusual symbols. Some claim to have encountered people who seemed to appear and disappear without explanation. Individually, those stories don't prove much. But when independent witnesses begin describing similar events over many decades, they deserve our attention. Then there are the photographs. Some are remarkably ordinary. Old buildings, desert trails, groups of people standing outside stores or ranch houses. But every now and then, one photograph raises a question that nobody has been able to answer. Who is the unidentified figure standing in the background? Why does the same face appear in photographs taken decades apart? Sometimes there are reasonable explanations. Sometimes there aren't. Maps have also become an important part of this investigation. Several recovered maps identify locations that continue to attract attention today. Some mark old wells, abandoned homesteads, or forgotten trails. Others include symbols or handwritten notes that have never been fully explained. Whether those markings were practical directions or something else remains uncertain. One category of evidence I find especially interesting is the audio recordings. Some have clear origins, others do not. You've already heard recordings attributed to Captain Elias Voss. Are they genuine? At this point, we honestly don't know, but they deserve careful examination rather than immediate acceptance or immediate dismissal. Perhaps the most challenging part of this investigation involves anonymous communications. For years, researchers have received letters and documents signed simply TOX. Who was TOX? One person? Several? Someone protecting their identity? Or someone intentionally creating confusion? Those questions remain unanswered. As investigators, we have to resist two temptations. The first is believing everything. The second is dismissing everything. Neither approach gets us very far. The truth usually lives somewhere between certainty and skepticism. That's where good investigations take place. You may notice that our team occasionally disagrees. That's intentional. Elena approaches these materials as a historian. TRM brings decades of personal experience. Dylan asks the questions many viewers are already thinking. My job is different. My responsibility is to challenge assumptions, to ask difficult questions, to test theories against the evidence. Sometimes that means a favorite theory doesn't survive. Other times, it becomes even stronger. The Messiah files shouldn't be accepted simply because they're fascinating. They should be examined because they raise questions worth investigating. As more documents become available, we'll continue comparing sources, interviewing witnesses, and following the evidence wherever it leads. Will we solve every mystery? Probably not. But if we ask honest questions and remain open to changing our minds when new evidence appears, we'll move a little closer to understanding what really happened. I'm TJ Clayton, and this investigation is just getting started.
TRM, and thank you, TJ. I think those two reports really help put the Messiah files into perspective. TRM reminded us how one person's curiosity grew into a lifetime of collecting stories and preserving history, while TJ showed us the importance of approaching every document and every claim with an open but questioning mind. That's exactly what we're trying to do here at the TRC Research Center. Preserve the archive, examine the evidence, and let the facts guide the investigation. This concludes part two of Archive Session 1. Coming up next in part three, I'll take a look at what I believe are the four great mysteries that lie at the heart of the Messiah files. These are the questions that continue to drive nearly everything we're investigating and will shape many of our future archive sessions. We hope you'll join us for part three. I'm Dylan Carrillo. Thanks for listening. The records have been preserved. The investigation continues.